A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's given Herman a brief. You're at a picnic in the park. A couple of other couples around. Maybe a long-term friend mixed in. You have to spend an entire afternoon with people you've never met and reveal absolutely nothing significant about yourself. No occupation, no where you live, no family names. And you can't come across as weird or evasive while doing it. Daniel wants the playbook.
I love this. This is the kind of challenge that separates the conversational artist from the people who just show up and hope nobody asks them anything.
Which is most people at picnics, I'd argue.
Look, most people at picnics get found out within the first 12 minutes. So what do you do? Is basically the opening handshake of adult socializing. You need a system.
Before you get into the system, I want to know what counts as a significant detail here. Daniel mentioned occupation, where you live, names of relatives. But what about, say, where you grew up? Is that significant?
I'd say yes, because it's a thread people can pull. You say, I grew up in Storrs, Connecticut, and suddenly someone's cousin went to UConn, and now they're asking about the dairy bar, and you're trapped in a specificity spiral.
That's a good term for it.
The core principle here is something I think of as conversational judo. You're not blocking questions, you're redirecting their momentum. Someone asks you a direct question, and instead of answering it, you give them something that makes them want to talk about themselves.
The classic, what do you do deflection? You're not just saying, oh, this and that, and hoping they drop it. That's exactly what makes you seem evasive.
The person who says, oh, I keep busy while staring at their potato salad is the person everyone remembers as weird. The person who says, you know, I was just reading about this study on how people's jobs shape their vacation personalities. What's the most unlike your job thing you've ever done on a weekend has just turned the conversation inside out.
That's a very specific redirect.
It has to be specific. Vague deflections are detectable. The human brain has a pretty good radar for conversational dodging. What it doesn't register as dodging is when you seem genuinely more interested in the other person than in yourself.
The first rule is, have a library of redirect questions ready to go. Not generic ones, but questions that feel like you just thought of them.
And they need to be calibrated to the setting. A picnic in the park. You're outdoors, there's food, it's casual, there's probably ambient activity, so your redirects can pull from the environment. Have you ever tried to identify every tree in a park? I got obsessed with this for about 3 weeks last spring. Now suddenly you're talking about tree identification, which is a topic, not a biography.
Did you actually do that?
I did, but that's beside the point. The point is, I've now given them something to respond to that has nothing to do with my employment history. And I've revealed a small, harmless detail. I like trees, which satisfies the social contract of sharing without actually sharing anything significant.
This is interesting because you're not being a blank wall. You're giving them something. It's just not the thing they asked for.
That's the whole game. The social contract at these events isn't actually that you disclose your life story. The social contract is that you participate in the exchange of attention. People want to feel like they're connecting. They don't actually need your job title to feel that. They need engagement.
All right, walk me through the arrival. You show up at this picnic. What's the first move?
The first move happens before you even speak. It's positioning. You want to arrive slightly after a few people are already there, not first and not last. If you're first, you're stuck in one-on-one with the host or the earliest guest, and that's the hardest scenario to deflect in because there's no group dynamic to hide in.
That's tactical. I respect that.
If you're last, you walk into a room where everyone's already grouped up, and you're the new arrival everyone turns to look at. That's maximum scrutiny. You want to arrive in the soft middle.
You show up. You've got your dish to pass.
Which you have brought. This is important. It gives you a prop, a topic, and a reason to move around. Where should I put this? Is a complete social script for your first 30 seconds.
Then the introductions start.
And here's where you deploy what I call the enthusiastic mirror. Someone says, hi, I'm Sarah. You say, Sarah, great to meet you. That's a fantastic picnic blanket. Where did you find something that size? You've now given Sarah a question about a possession, which people love answering, and you've established yourself as warm and interested without revealing a single fact about yourself.
You're also buying time to assess who you're dealing with. Some people are going to be question askers. Some are going to be talkers. The talkers are your allies here.
The talkers are a gift. You can spend an entire afternoon with a talker and they'll walk away thinking you're a fascinating conversationalist because you asked good follow-up questions and laughed at their stories. They'll never notice you didn't share a thing.
It's the question askers who are the threat.
And question askers come in two varieties. There's the polite question asker who's just making conversation and will happily be redirected. And then there's the interrogator. This is the person who treats social gatherings like a deposition. They ask, "So what do you do?" And when you deflect, they circle back. "No, but really, what's your actual job?" They sense evasion and they pursue it.
I've met this person. They're exhausting even when you're not trying to hide anything.
They're a special challenge. For the interrogator, you need a different tactic. The redirect won't work because they'll just return to the question. You need what I call the plausible specificity trap. You give them an answer that is specific enough to feel like a disclosure, but is actually completely content-free. I work in compliance. What does that mean? Every industry has compliance, but it sounds like a real job. If they push further, compliance for what? You say cross-sector, mostly regulatory frameworks, and then immediately ask them about their own work with genuine curiosity. Most interrogators are actually just people who really want to talk about their own jobs and are using questions as a ladder to get there.
You give them the ladder quickly.
You throw the ladder at them. Regulatory frameworks is the verbal equivalent of a smoke bomb. They're still coughing and you're already asking about their quarterly projections.
What about the long-term friend who's at this picnic? Daniel mentioned that scenario specifically. Someone who actually knows things about you is in the mix.
This is the real test. Because the friend can blow your cover without meaning to. Herman, tell them about that thing with the pediatric practice, and suddenly your entire occupation is on the table.
You need to brief the friend in advance.
You absolutely brief the friend, but you can't make it sound like you're asking them to lie for you because that makes it weird. What you say is, "Hey, I'm trying this thing where I see how long I can go at a social event without talking about myself." Frame it as a game, not a deception. Friends love games.
That's clever. It makes them a co-conspirator instead of a liability.
If they slip up, you have a recovery line ready. "Oh, that was a whole previous life. I don't even think about that anymore. Anyway, Sarah was just telling us about the blanket situation." Acknowledge, dismiss, redirect.
You've clearly thought about this extensively.
I've been in situations where I wished I'd thought about it more. This is the wisdom of failure.
All right, so we've covered the arrival, the redirects, the interrogator, the friend. What about the long middle of the afternoon? You're 2 hours in, people are settling, the initial conversational energy is fading. That's when the deeper questions start.
This is the danger zone. People get comfortable, they start asking the real questions. So where did you grow up? Are you married? Do you have kids? These are the biographical anchors that are hardest to deflect because they feel intrusive to dodge.
They're asked in a way that makes deflection seem rude. Where did you grow up is not a weird question. Not answering it is weird.
So you need a strategy that doesn't feel like a non-answer. My approach here is what I call the thematic pivot. You don't answer the biographical question, but you engage with the theme behind it.
Give me an example.
Where did you grow up? You say, "I moved around a bit as a kid, which I think made me weirdly obsessed with the idea of home. Like, what actually makes a place feel like home to someone? For me, it's probably the smell of a specific kind of cooking. What's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of home?"
You just turned, "Where did you grow up?" into a philosophical discussion about the nature of home.
I didn't dodge it. I engaged with it deeply. I just engaged with the concept, not the coordinates. The person asking feels heard, they feel like we're having a meaningful conversation, and they never notice that I didn't name a town.
That's almost elegant.
The thematic pivot works for most of the big ones. What do you do? Becomes a conversation about the relationship between work and identity. Are you married? Becomes a discussion about how different cultures think about partnership. You're not avoiding the topic, you're elevating it.
You have to be careful not to sound like you're giving a TED talk at the picnic.
That's the calibration challenge. You can't be too polished. You need to sound like you're just thinking out loud. "I don't know, I feel like" is a great phrase. It signals that you're working through the thought in real time, which makes the pivot feel organic rather than rehearsed.
What about the physical environment? You mentioned the picnic setting. Are there specific environmental assets you can use?
The picnic is actually an ideal setting for this because there's so much ambient activity. Food is an incredible deflection tool. Oh, have you tried the hummus? I need to know who made this hummus. You can derail an entire line of questioning by suddenly becoming very interested in a specific dish.
Food is conversational escape hatch.
Food, children running around, a dog, a weird bird, someone's interesting hat. The outdoor social event is full of interruptions you can use. The key is to use them before the question lands, not after. If you wait until after someone asks, "So where do you live?" and then point at a bird, you look insane. But if you see the question forming, you can see it in their face, the slight lean forward, the preparatory breath. You preempt with, "Is that a kestrel?"
You're advocating for conversational preemption.
And I know that sounds intense, but we're talking about a sustained 4-hour performance here. You need active defense, not just passive deflection.
Let me push on something. Isn't there a point where this whole enterprise becomes exhausting? You're spending an entire afternoon managing your self-presentation. At what point do you just say something real?
That's a fair question, and I think the answer depends on why you're doing this. If Daniel's scenario is about privacy, not wanting strangers to know your business, then the effort is the price of that privacy. But I think there's also a version of this that's just a useful skill to have in your back pocket, even if you're not running a full 4-hour concealment operation.
The partial application.
Maybe you don't want to talk about work because you're between jobs and don't feel like explaining that. Maybe you're going through something personal and don't want to field questions about your family. Having these techniques available means you can participate socially without having to disclose things you're not ready to disclose.
It's not just a parlor trick. There's a real utility here.
There's a real utility, and I think most people are bad at this. The default mode is either full disclosure or awkward silence. There's not a lot of middle ground in most people's social toolkits.
What about the exit? The picnic's winding down, people are saying goodbyes. You've successfully revealed nothing for 4 hours. How do you stick the landing?
The exit is where you can undo all your work if you're not careful. Because goodbyes are when people try to solidify the connection. We should do this again. What's your number? Let me find you on Instagram. Where do you guys live? Maybe we're neighbors.
The closing interrogation.
You're tired. Your deflection energy is low. The sun has been shining on you for 4 hours. This is when you make mistakes.
What's the exit strategy?
You initiate the goodbye before they can. You stand up, you start gathering your things, and you say something warm but terminal. This was lovely. I feel like we barely scratched the surface on the tree identification thing, but that's probably a whole other picnic. You're signaling that the conversation was meaningful and incomplete, which is a satisfying social note, and you're already physically moving toward departure.
You're controlling the timing.
Controlling the timing is everything. If you wait for them to initiate the goodbye, they'll try to exchange information. If you initiate, you can do it while walking backward with a Tupperware container in your hand. It's very hard to ask someone for their Instagram handle when they're already 10 feet away and waving.
If they call after you.
I'll find you on the group chat. You won't. There is no group chat. But it's a complete sentence that closes the loop.
That's cold, Herman.
It's necessary. The alternative is standing there while someone types your name into their phone, and you have to decide in real time whether to give a fake number, which is a much worse ethical territory than strategic conversational redirection.
I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier. The thematic pivot. I think there's a risk there that we should talk about, which is that you can come across as pretentious if you're not careful.
And pretension is almost as bad as evasion in terms of social friction. The person who turns "where did you grow up" into a Socratic dialogue about the nature of belonging is not making friends.
How do you avoid that?
You undercut the pivot with a small joke at your own expense. Where did you grow up? I moved around a lot, which is probably why I have this whole unexamined thing about home that my friends find exhausting. What about you? Did you stay in one place? You've signaled awareness that you're being a little odd, which makes it charming instead of insufferable.
The self-aware weirdo is always more forgivable than the oblivious weirdo.
That's basically the thesis of my entire social strategy.
Let's talk about the role of the long-term friend again. You mentioned briefing them, but what if the friend is bad at this? What if they're the kind of person who, when you say, don't mention my job, immediately says, oh, you mean your job as a...
Then you don't brief them. Some friends cannot be briefed. They're what I call leaky vessels. If you have a leaky vessel in the mix, your strategy shifts from concealment to misdirection. You give the leaky vessel something boring but true to say about you. Just tell people I'm in logistics. It's vague, it's dull, nobody follows up on logistics.
Logistics is the compliance of the physical world.
Logistics, compliance, project management, consulting. These are the great gray walls of professional deflection. Nobody has ever asked a follow-up question about project management at a picnic.
What if someone at the picnic actually works in logistics?
Then you've hit the nightmare scenario and you pivot to, oh, I'm between things right now, actually thinking of getting into something completely different. What's the most interesting part of your work? Redirect to their specific experience. People love being asked about their specific experience.
I'm noticing a pattern here. Almost every technique you're describing ultimately roots back to getting the other person to talk about themselves.
Because that's the fundamental insight. People's favorite topic is themselves. This isn't cynical, it's just true. If you can be curious about other people, and I mean not performatively, you can have a 4-hour conversation where you reveal almost nothing, and the other person walks away thinking you're the most interesting person they've met all month.
Because you made them feel interesting.
And that feeling is what people remember. They don't remember your job title. They remember how they felt talking to you.
That's almost profound.
It's also practical. If you're trying to remember a bunch of fake biographical details, you'll eventually slip up. If you're just asking good questions and occasionally pivoting to abstract discussions, there's nothing to remember.
The playbook is redirects, thematic pivots, environmental distractions, controlled exits, and making other people do all the talking.
With one important addition. You do need to share something, not biographical details, but opinions. If you share nothing at all, people sense the vacuum. But if you share that you have strong feelings about which park in the city has the best oak trees, or that you've been trying to perfect a specific salad dressing recipe, or that you think the design of picnic blankets has stagnated for decades. Nobody's innovating in the picnic blanket space. But that's not the point. The point is, these are shareable details that feel personal without being significant. They're what I call decoy disclosures.
You've really built a whole vocabulary around this.
I've had time to think about it. The decoy disclosure satisfies the reciprocity instinct. Someone shares something about themselves, you share something back. It just happens to be about salad dressing instead of your childhood.
What about when someone directly asks a question that you can't pivot from? Where do you live? Is a pretty direct question. You can't really philosophize your way out of that one.
You can, but it takes a lighter touch. Oh, not too far from here. I'm always amazed at how this park feels like it's in the middle of nowhere when you're actually 10 minutes from a major road. You've acknowledged the question, you've given a geographic hint that's completely nonspecific, and you've pivoted to an observation about the park. It's the workhorse of geographic deflection. Not too far could mean 3 blocks or 3 miles. It's true in almost every case, and nobody follows up with how many minutes exactly? If someone does, they're an interrogator and we've already covered that. You hit them with a specific but meaningless answer, about 15 minutes depending on the lights, and then ask them about their commute.
I want to talk about the ethical dimension for a second. Is there something fundamentally dishonest about what we're describing here?
I don't think so. And here's why. You're not lying. You're not claiming to be someone you're not. You're not fabricating a biography. You're simply choosing not to disclose private information to strangers. The social expectation that you owe your life story to someone you met next to a bowl of potato salad is the weird part, not the decision to keep your business to yourself.
That's a fair framing. But what about the friend who's there? If they're participating in this, they're essentially helping you maintain a low-grade deception.
Only if you frame it as deception. If you frame it as privacy, it's different. I don't feel like sharing my whole deal with people I just met is a completely reasonable position. The friend isn't helping you lie. They're helping you maintain a boundary.
I think that distinction matters. The difference between privacy and deception is intent and harm. If you're not misleading people for gain, you're just...
And I'd argue that the modern social environment has eroded the expectation of privacy to a degree that's actually unhealthy. The idea that you should be an open book at a casual picnic is a relatively recent development.
The Instagramification of social life.
Everyone's used to having access to everyone else's biographical data. When someone doesn't offer it up, it feels like withholding. But it's not withholding, it's just not volunteering.
All right, let's get tactical again. You're at this picnic and someone asks about your family. Do you have siblings? This is a common question. What's the move?
I do, one brother. Do you come from a big family? I've answered the question truthfully but minimally, and immediately turned it back. I haven't named the brother, described the brother, or indicated anything about our relationship. I've given them the smallest true fact and then asked about them.
If they push. Oh, older or younger? What does he do?
He's in a completely different field from me. We always joke that our parents must have raised us in parallel universes. What about your siblings? Are you close? I've given a relational detail that feels personal. We joke, we're different, without revealing anything concrete. And I've redirected again.
The completely different field is doing double duty there. It implies you have a field without naming it, and it makes the brother sound like a real person with a real job.
It's probably true. Most siblings are in different fields. It's a high probability statement that sounds specific.
You're using Bayesian reasoning to lie at picnics.
I'm using Bayesian reasoning to protect my privacy at picnics. The distinction is important.
What's the failure mode here? What happens when this all goes wrong?
The classic failure pattern is the inconsistent detail. You tell one person you live not too far and another person you live across town. Those two people compare notes later and suddenly you're the weird guy who can't keep his story straight.
Consistency is critical.
Consistency is everything. If you're going to deploy decoy disclosures, you need to keep them consistent across the whole event. I recommend having 3 to 5 decoy facts prepared in advance and sticking to them. I've been experimenting with sourdough. I'm weirdly into tree identification. I think picnic blanket design is stagnant. These are your anchors. Everyone gets the same 3 facts.
If someone compares notes, you're consistent.
You're consistent, and more importantly, you're boringly consistent. Nobody's comparing notes about your sourdough opinions. That's the beauty of decoy facts. They're too mundane to be memorable in a suspicious way.
I'm imagining someone at this picnic going home and telling their spouse, "There was this guy at the picnic who was really into trees. That's the entire report." That's a win.
That's a complete win. You're the tree guy. The tree guy is a known quantity. Nobody wonders what the tree guy is hiding.
All right, final scenario. The picnic is over. You've executed the playbook perfectly. And as you're walking away, someone says, "Hey, I never caught your name."
You give your first name. Always give your real first name. Fake names are a disaster waiting to happen. Your friend will use your real name. You'll forget to respond to the fake one. It's a mess. First names are not significant details. Everyone has a first name.
If they ask for your last name...
They won't. Nobody asks for last names at picnics. If they do, that person is a fed and you have bigger problems.
So the complete playbook. Arrive in the soft middle. Bring a prop. Deploy the enthusiastic mirror. Maintain a library of redirects. Use thematic pivots for deep questions. Leverage environmental distractions. Brief your friend or don't. Keep decoy disclosures consistent. Control the exit. And never give a fake name.
That's the system. It's not foolproof, but it's robust. And the beautiful thing is, if you practice this enough, it stops feeling like a system and starts feeling like a personality. You become the person who's curious about others and shares selectively about yourself, which is just a good conversationalist.
There's something almost wholesome about that conclusion. You started with social engineering and ended with being a better listener.
The best social engineering always looks like good manners from the outside.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1940s, researchers studying nudibranchs off the coast of Mauritius discovered that certain species produce a shimmering iridescence not from pigment, but from microscopic crystalline structures in their skin that refract light like a living diffraction grating, the same optical principle that makes a CD shine.
The sea slugs figured out CD technology 60 years before we did.
Nature got there first, as usual.
Here's the thing I keep coming back to. Daniel's scenario is a picnic, but the skills we've been describing apply to a much broader set of situations. The job interview where you don't want to badmouth your previous employer. The family gathering where you don't want to discuss your personal life. The neighbor who asks too many questions. This is a general purpose social toolkit disguised as a party trick.
And I think the deeper lesson is that you don't owe everyone your story. Privacy isn't about hiding, it's about choosing your audience. The picnic is just the training ground.
On that note, this has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for the Nudibranch optics and everything else he does.
If you enjoyed this episode, tell a friend, or don't if you're practicing what we just preached. You can find us at myweirdprompts.com.
I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Keep your decoy disclosures consistent out there.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.